Okay, so implications from GW170817 and I love Q relations for relativistic hybrid stars. This is work that I did with Ken Yagi, David Alvarez Castillo, David Blaschke, and Armin Sedrakian. So, okay, we've detected this binary neutron star, or is it a binary neutron star? It's not 100% sure. We have the mass on the mass plane, essentially the restrictions of what it could be. It could be a long-lived hypermassive neutron star, or it could be a black hole after the merger. We don't really know. But if we just focus on the gravitational wave data alone, the data do not even rule out a black hole neutron star or something more exotic. Some people would even argue that you could have boson stars, neutron stars, or in the exotic compact objects that I have down there, I'm also thinking about these hybrid stars. Now, if we just focus on the gravitational wave observations alone, you just use a waveform model, and we're, at least what I read in the paper, Ben could correct me if I have something wrong here. We have the point mass or the black hole binary waveform onto which we actually have post-Newtonian approximations that include spin-spin effects. And then we have finite size effects. I think that should be 5pn, not 1pn here. Parameterized through the tidal deformabilities, which are the quantities that actually enter, we try to infer from the gravitational wave observations. In fact, it's a combination of these tidal deformabilities that we infer, but we can place constraints on these separately for each stars. Now, these K2Is that I have here, this is the inferred parameters. These K2Is are usually called the tidal love numbers. And just to get you give you an idea about what these are, just in the context of a Newtonian of Newtonian physics, if you have an external gravitational potential tidal field that is given by this second order derivative with respect to xi and xj, then that induces, if you have a distant perturber that has this external field, it induces a quadruple moment on the star, which is given by this expression in the Newtonian limit. And then the deformation essentially on the star, the quadrupolar deformation, is proportional to the tidal field that excited it. And the proportionality constant is essentially this tidal love number that goes in there. And we have this dimensionless ratio, sorry, this r to the fifth power that goes in there. And to make to introduce a dimensionless number in the game, we usually divide this love number, sorry, we multiply this combination by, or divide it by m to the fifth, the mass to the fifth power to make this lambda I a dimensionless number. And in relativity, we usually said G and C equal to unity. And this is what's shown here. So it's essentially these lambda I's where we set C and G equal to unity. And these are the constraints that we have from the LIGO observations for the high spin priors and the low spin priors. The high spin priors are actually a bit more constraining. So these are more conservative constraints. So I'm just going to focus here. If you look at the numbers, this is the line where things are equal, so really everything only above this line matter, because it should be symmetric with respect to this line. So the constraints that we have, the 50% constraints essentially are between essentially 2,000 and 500 or something like that. And essentially this is the area where things become more and more compact.
I don't think it's measured, right?
I'm not saying it's
in. You said between. You're applying at 500 or...
No. There's a range. It's essentially here. It's really a constraint in this area. It's not necessarily in that. But for a particular mass, for the 1.4 solar masses, there is a measurement, an upper bound, an upper limit of the 90% confidence interval. So here, because we actually have a range of masses, we cannot just pinpoint and say one number. So this is through the entire space of parameters you're trying to do estimation. This is what the constraints are on the tidal deformability.
One thing about the plot that confuses me is you just said it was supposed to be symmetric around that.
And it's not, yes.
The 90% confidence.
It's not, yeah. That's maybe something that Ben can...
We vary lambda 1, lambda 2 independently in the waveform model. I mean, in the post-Newtonian terms that go into the waveform model.
Okay, you have freedom to specify lambda 1,
lambda 2. You sample purely in lambda 1, lambda 2.
I see.
Don't force consistent equations of state across the two objects.
Fair enough. All right. And so these are the constraints that we have now. And if you think about these lines, essentially what these lines is that they correspond, or strips it better say, they correspond to different equations of state. And the equations of state, the way you do it is you go back to the mass-mass plot that I showed earlier. For each combination of values for the mass-mass, you can actually construct solve the equations of structure with a distant perturber, and you compute the lambda ones and lambda twos that correspond to these particular stars, and then you can just create strips that correspond to the different chirp, to the same value of chirp mass, but for different masses, combinations of masses of the stars. So certain equations of state seem to be ruled out for the moment. And so we tend to prefer the more compact equations of state. And as Ben kind of showed, the reason why I have this is a mass radius plot for various equations of state, it's basically this area here that is now preferred, like between 10 and 14 kilometers, roughly speaking. So we have more compact stars. Now, this is just a brief introduction into what are these hybrid compact stars. So for sufficiently high densities, you probably all know that we can actually have quarkic confinement. And in 1968, Uli Gerlach, who I think is the same Gerlach from the Stern-Gerlach experiment in quantum mechanics, considered equations of state which allow a first-order transition between the hadronic phase in a star and the quark matter. And if you have a sufficiently large jump in energy density over which you have a large constant pressure, this phase transition leads to a third family of compact objects from this scenario. And so this idea of hybrid compact stars and third family started with Stern-Gerlach. And just in case you hear the words third family again, because it was a little bit confusing to me at the beginning, if you have a mass versus central density plot, and you compute TOV stars in general relativity, just like we all know, we have the branch of stable white dwarfs, then we have the unstable white dwarfs here. We just make it dashed. Then we have the minimum mass of a neutron star, the mid down here, and then we have the stable branch for neutron stars, and then we have if you just used hadronic matter, you would just go down again, and then you would have unstable neutron stars. What happens with these equations of state that can support a first-order phase transition that has a sharp jump in a large jump in energy density is that you get a new family with unstable stars. Again, you have a minimum mass, and then you go up, and here you get these hybrid stars. Essentially.
So what's that mass?
Sorry, what mass?
For that minimum mass.
Here?
Yeah, for the hybrid star.
It depends on the equation of state, really. So there's plenty of ranges. I'm going to show a mass density plot, a mass radius plot, where you will see a few possibilities. And even the point where this transition occurs, that you go from neutron stars to hybrid stars, that also varies. There's a zoo of options, in fact. Or at least based on what I know. And now, in case you hear the word twin stars in the future, which is something that arises in this scenario, twin stars are the same, are the hadronic stars and the hybrid stars that have exactly the same mass, but different radii. So for this little range here in hybrid stars, these are called twins because of this property. Okay, so and the structure of these essentially are that you have a quark core that is surrounded by a hadronic shell, and these are separated by a first-order phase transition in between. Now, of course, we don't really know the equation of state, so people, you know, can do their own magic with their nuclear theories. Jim and Konstantinos are experts here. I am not a nuclear theorist. So based on what I've read, there exist two prescriptions for matching the low-density nucleonic equation of state to the quark matter equation of state. Which one is realized in nature depends on the surface tension between the nuclear and the quark phase. And if the tension is between these two phases is high, or actually if it's low, what